Good afternoon. My name is Anne Cavall, and on behalf of the Breast Cancer Education Association Board and volunteers, I welcome you to the BCEA webinar education series. I encourage you to grab a pen and paper, as there will be plenty of good information shared in the next hour. We do have participants joining us in two ways, via webcast or by phone. For those connected via webcast, please follow along with the slideshow on your screen. Also, for those connected via the webcast, you should see a box to the left of the slides where you will be able to submit questions during the Q&A portion near the end of the session. If questions arise during the session, please feel free to submit them as well, and we will try to insert those as we can. This year, the BCEA continues to expand our mission, providing frequent breast cancer educational resources that are easy to access. This year's education programming promises to encourage, empower, and engage our community in a variety of ways, including webinars such as this one offered throughout the year, our signature education-focused fall conference that will be held on Saturday, October 7th, 2017, at the TIES Conference Center in St. Paul near the state, Minnesota State Fairgrounds. And through increased ongoing resources on our website and social media channels available 24/7. If you are unable to attend any of our previous webinars, recordings of these sessions are available on the BCEA website at www.breastcancereducation.org under the webinar tab. This is a great way to easily access valuable information at your convenience. We also invite you to join us for a little fun and participate in at least one of a couple partner upcoming fundraisers. The first is the Breast Dinner Ever and will be on June 8th at Jones in the Park in St. Paul. Or please attend Shulock Breast Fest Music Festival on September 16th in Corcoran. Both opportunities, great opportunities to have fun and support a good cause. And details of those both events are going to be on our Facebook page and on our website. If you have not done so already, please be sure to connect with us on social media. We regularly share and foster discussion on the latest news and resources in breast cancer detection, diagnosis, treatment, and survivorship. We also encourage you to share what you learned today using hashtag BCEAWebinar. Please be sure to also keep your eye out for more information on our next webinar set for July 12, 2017. Other 2017 webinar dates are set for August, November, and December, and we will continue to share specific information on upcoming webinars as soon as complete details are available. And now I'd like to introduce the speakers for today's webinar. Carmela Claypool is a physical therapist at Healthiest Optimum Rehab Clinic in Maplewood, Minnesota. She is lymphedema certified from the Academy of Lymphatic Studies and from the Lymphology Association of North America. 95% of the focus of her clinical practice for the last 26 years has been the evaluation and treatment of lymphatic disorders, peripheral edemas, cancer rehabilitation, and wound care. Carrie McCoskey is an occupational therapist. She has been lymphedema VADR certified since 1999 and has lymphedema Cassie Smith certification and Lymphology Association of North America certified since 2001. McCoskey has treated both lymphedema and breast cancer care since this time for Fairview Health Services in Minnesota. Welcome, Carmela and Carrie.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hi, this is Carmela, and I want to thank you to the Breast Cancer Education Association for inviting Carrie and me to do this presentation, and also to the persons attending this webinar. The objectives of this today are going to be to learn about lymphedema, learn about lymphedema diagnosis, lymphedema risks, and also about treatments and advances in lymphedema. We'll start with this cartoon. So here we have a person going to the healthcare provider saying that's lymphedema. During the medical school of the physicians throughout 4-year school, they are taught about the lymphatic system and the lymphedema only 1 hour on or less during their 4 years of school. So the objective today, I'm going to be starting to talk about lymphedema, the lymphedema diagnosis, the risk, and then Carrie is going to be talking about treatments and advances in lymphedema. So this is a picture of the lymphatic system. The lymphatic system is one of the organs that is present throughout the human body. The components of the lymphatic system are the lymph vessels. They are round, kidney shaped, green guys here. We have about 700 to 900 throughout the whole body. The bigger ones are around the axilla and then around the inguinal area. There are about 30 on each area, depending on the size of the complexion of the patient. The components of the lymphatic system are the lymph nodes. The connection, you see this long line, those are the lymph vessels. Also, the spleen is part of the lymphatic system. The thymus gland, the tonsils, and the Peyer patches. So when anybody is going to get a cold or is going to get sick, sometimes you feel this swelling behind your ear on the side of your head or neck. So that's the lymphatic system that is trying to protect you. So the role, the primary role of the lymphatic system is part of the circulatory system. It transports the extracellular fluid and also has an immune response. This is a diagram of the lymphatic system. On this area here, we can see the initial lymph vessels and then start very fine below the skin, and then they grow deeper into more trunks and ducts. And these lymphatic vessels run together with the veins and the arteries. They run throughout the whole system. This is a picture of the lymph node, and they have these connections that come in and they come out of the lymph node, and then everything runs through the whole body and drains to the venous system through the subclavian vein. This is a cut of a skin. You see, this is the skin. This is the epidermis. We have the dermis. Then we have the subcutis and the muscle. And you can see how the blood capillaries and the lymphatic capillaries, they start right there, and then they keep going down deep into the body. Here you can see how this lymph fluid moves through the body. So we have the blood capillaries, and then we have all these molecules that they are running through the body. These are too big, and then the lymphatic system will take them. They open this flap and they get into the lymphatic system, and then they turn into the lymph fluid. These are the connections, how the lymphatic fluid is divided and connected. So on red, you can see this long line is the watershed. We have the vertical watershed in the front, and then we have in the back, then we have the clavicular watershed, and we have the horizontal watershed in the front and then in the back. This divides the lymphatic system in territories. So that's where they go and train in certain on the lymphatic ducts or the different territories. We have superficial connections where these lymph vessels, they connect. This is the front part of the body. This is the back part. So the lymph vessels in the front, they run from the axilla to the axilla. When they run parallel, they are called anastomosis. So this will be the anterior axilla to axilla anastomosis. Then we have on the side of the body, from the axilla to the inguinal nodes, we have the axilla to inguinal anastomosis, and they cross the watershed. Then between the inguinal area, we have what we call the interinguinal. On the back part of the body, we have the inguinal anastomosis, and then we have the posterior axilla to axilla anastomosis. We need to learn about the lymph vessels. They start tiny, like lymph capillaries. They get deeper, they turn into lymph collectors. They go bigger, deeper into the body, and then they turn into ducts and trunks. This is another picture of the lymphatic drainage. So they start really superficial, below the skin, and then they grow deeper into the different layers. These are the muscles, and they grow deeper into the different layers of the body. We need to talk about this, how this lymph fluid moves through the body. It's called lymph transport. So this is a lymph vessel, and there are these flaps or valves. So the lymph fluid is going to get into this lymph vessel, and then this walls are going to start to expand. They get bigger because there is all this lymph flow coming into the lymph vessel. Once this full, then the walls are going to contract, and then they will move the fluid to the next lymph vessel. This lymphatic transport depends on the muscle pumping on the lymphangios, the opening and closing of the endothelial gaps, the mechanical pull of the anchoring filaments, also the arterial pulse, and the muscle contraction and the respiration influence. Also the oncotic and osmotic pressure in the interstitial fluid, they are influenced. The lymph fluid is composed of large protein molecules, water, cellular debris, foreign substances, and fat molecules. Lymphedema. Lymphedema, it happens because there is the malfunctioning of the lymphatic system. It's a persistent swelling of the body, of a body part, and most frequently are the extremities. And this is caused because there is an abnormal accumulation of protein-rich fluids in the interstitial space. There is also a persistent inflammatory state of the lymphatic system. We need to differentiate between lymphedema and lymphoma. Many patients come to me and they say, I have lymphoma. No, lymphoma is the cancer of the lymphatic system. So we're talking today is about lymphedema. Who gets lymphedema? Lymphedema is caused because the lymph nodes are taken off, they are dissected. They are caused because of radiation treatments that need to be done because of the cancer. There are persons who have primary lymphedema. They are born with problems in the lymphatic system. People who have trauma or surgery, they develop scar tissue, so the lymph fluid doesn't move well and end up having some trouble with swelling. Persons with chronic vein problems, they could develop lymphedema. And obesity is one of the high risk factors for lymphedema. We need to talk about breast cancer-related lymphedema. According to the National Cancer Institute, anywhere between 5 to 17% of women who have a sentinel node biopsy will develop lymphedema. That rate will increase if they need to have radiation treatment. Among women who have axillary lymph node dissection, the percentage is higher. It's about 20 to 53%. And the risk will increase with the number of nodes that are taken out. Whether you had sentinel node biopsy or axillary node dissection, be sure to ask your surgeon how many lymph nodes have removed, because this varies from person to person. Breast cancer-related lymphedema could happen near where the lymph nodes have been affected. So it will be the hand, the arm, the underarm, the chest wall, the upper back. We need to talk about axillary wedge syndrome. It's also known as cording. Sometimes it develops as a side effect of the sentinel node biopsy and or the lymph node dissection. We have Dr. Linda Kohler here at the University of Minnesota, who did a study with women who had breast cancer surgeries. And she found about 47% of her subjects developed lymphedema. And it didn't resolve on its own, because it used to be said that at 3 months they will go away. But these patients who had the axillary wedge formation, some developed trunk incidents, and they lasted for about 12 weeks. How to recognize lymphedema? Many people start feeling heaviness on the arm or tightness, reporting that they have feel full of the arm without no swelling. The swelling could appear at the end of the day, is better in the morning. The symptoms will worsen without treatment. The skin and the soft tissues will lose their elasticity and may harden. They form what we call the fibrosis. So, if you are in front of, you can make a fist with your hand and compare one hand with the other hand. You see these deep valleys, they need to stay deep. That means that your arm is not swollen, your hand is not swollen. Another way to look at that is if you stand in front of a mirror, you bend your elbow, have your hands on the top of your shoulder. You can see these bony prominences. They need to start the same. The lymphedema will occur when this starts getting a little bit fatty there, a little bit bigger. This is a comparison that Gunter Close does when he does his certification class. So these are two sponges. Let's pretend they are our arms. So this arm is the one who had some type of breast cancer surgery. The lymph nodes have been moved. So the patient starts feeling, complaining of heaviness. So what happens is the body is starting to accumulate some extra fluid in there. We don't see any difference, but the patient starts feeling that heaviness on the arm. Now, when the fluid starts accumulating more, you see this double the size of the sponge compared to the other sponge that didn't have the surgery. So that's lymphedema. There are different types of lymphedema. There is primary lymphedema and there is secondary lymphedema. Primary lymphedema is when a person is born. You can see right away one arm or one leg. You can see it's already swollen. There is lymphedema tarda, that after a certain age, patients develop swelling. We have secondary lymphedema is when a person had like a breast cancer surgery or other surgeries, the lymph starts getting puffier. How do we diagnose the lymphedema? Lymphedema is a clinical diagnosis. We need to do a true evaluation. We need to have a good patient history. We need to examine the tissue and the texture of the skin integrity. We will take measurements and do volume calculations, and we take baseline pictures. And also we could use imaging. So here we are. This is the patient who comes and they ask, let's fill out this form. Why do we do this? Because we need to know what are the signs, what are the problems that the patient is presenting now. Then the therapist will turn into a private investigator. We need to look and see what's going on. We need to stop, listen, and look. Unfortunately, with the computers, most clinicians are looking at their computer, not looking at the patient. So we need to stop and look and listen and look at the patient on the eye. We need to examine the texture of the skin, the integrity of the skin. We will touch it and see if there is any swelling. There is a way that we can find out if there is any swelling. It's called the water displacement. So this tank has water, and the patient will dip their arm or the leg in the tank, and then the extra fluid is going to come out, and we will measure the amount of fluid that is coming out of water. And then we compare with the other limb, arm, or leg. We could do measurements, so we have we measure along the knuckles. We can measure around the wrist, and then we go every 8 centimeters here in my practice, or some clinicians do every 4 centimeters. And then we go around with the centimeter and measure the girth. We take that measurement into a form or the computer, and then we go and do the volume calculations. There is a system called the LDS lymphedema index that measures the subclinical changes in the extracellular fluid. It could detect lymphedema up to 10 months earlier than with current methods. So this is a picture of the ImpediMed or LDS. This is computer. We have 2 electrodes on the arm and then 1 in the foot. And then we do the same measurement on the other side. We have the tissue tonometry that will measure the skin texture, and we can see some signs of fibrosis or hardening of the skin. This is a perimeter. It's more sophisticated. It's an infrared system and used mainly on the research centers. And this perimeter will go up and down. We'll measure the length of the arm and the circumference, and then it will go to the computer and will give us the volume. The methods of measuring the lymphedema we talk are the arm circumference with the centimeter. It's inexpensive, but it's unable to detect subclinical stages. It's not accurate. Water displacement is less simple, and we can see early detection of subclinical lymphedema. It's more accurate in the volume. And bioimpedance is reliable and reproducible, and we can see an early detection up to 10 months before we see any changes on the measurements. We talk about the diagnosis. It could be done by imaging. We have the lymphoscintigraphy that lymphography that give us best detailed imaging of the lymph vessels and active lymph nodes. There is also the oil contrast lymphography, but it's not appropriate because of the risk of clogging the lymphatic system. It could be done through computer tomography or venous Doppler. This is the near infrared fluorescence imaging that Dr. Eva Sivic at the University of Texas in Houston is doing now. So this started after the Iraq war. You see the soldiers with these goggles going with their arms. So this came to the clinic, and there is a camera that will look at the arm or leg, and they will inject a green dye. It's called indocin green dye. And that will measure how it moves through the limb. So this is a picture of that, how the dye moves through the arm or leg. This is a foot. You can see a normal foot. This is the heel. These are the toes, the ankles. So they inject this dye, this green dye, in two spaces, and this is a normal foot. It starts moving throughout. But on affected, this is a primary lymphedema. You see the toes, the heels, the ankles. So they have all this malformation. They are all tortures, and the green dye has a hard time moving throughout. This is a breast cancer-related lymphedema. We see the axilla here. This is the elbow, and the hand will be down here. So they will inject the green dye and will normally travel all the way to the axillary node. This is the affected arm that has lymphedema. So this is the hand, this is the axilla, the elbow. So the green dye is injected, and it has traveling through our system. And it moves, and very little comes up to the axilla. So lymphedema could happen on the arm, it could happen on the legs, it could happen on the head and neck, and this is a model called the Perspective Surveillance Model for Physical Rehabilitation for Women with Breast Cancer. We want to get the persons who are going through cancer treatment diagnosis, get them early before they start the treatment. Do a PT evaluation to see where they are in the range of motion, measure their arms, see the level of pain, the fatigue, if they are having any troubles, and check out their weight. Once they have the surgery, they will come back and we'll do the same measurements. And if we find any problems, they will be referred to for physical medicine or rehabilitation intervention. The persons who don't have any problems, we will continue monitoring this every 3 or 6 months and see if they have any trouble. So we had a baseline, and then we can continue to follow throughout. This is called the surveillance model. This is a publication in 2012 from the Cancer Magazine. It's free. You can get it on the internet. We talk about research. Research is critical for the breast cancer recovery. It has been shown that early exercises will decrease the impairment and increases the function of the arms or the legs. This is McNeely in 2010. Then we have a study of upper body training. It says may reduce lymphedema risk. And this was started by Dr. Catherine Schmidt here, and then they went to Penn in 2010. We have aerobic exercise studies that may reduce the risk of breast cancer recurrence in Holmes, 2005, and somebody followed Bayer in 2012. He also said that it will assist with the management of weight management and also reducing the fatigue. So people who are going through cancer treatments, if they do exercises, they will feel less fatigue and they will respond better to the treatments they are doing. This is a study from Brinkley in 2011. It says breast cancer patients overwhelmingly want to get education and they need to have an early intervention related to the side effects. An important factor is the education about infections. If a person gets a skin redness on the arm or the leg, gets chills, they start feeling of complaining of warm or fever, not everybody develops fever, could be an early sign of an infection coming into the body. So a person who has breast cancer-related surgeries, they need to know that. So this is one of our patients. This is the arm that had surgery. Breast cancer surgery, and this is a normal color of the skin. One day she woke up and she found all this skin redness. Thank goodness she has seen our physician, Dr. Rosenberg, and she has seen the therapist, and she knew she needed to call right away and get started early with antibiotics, because sometimes patients end up going to the emergency room and being hospitalized because this infection travels really fast through the body. I want to introduce you to the Dragon Divas. This is a group of women here in Minnesota who are breast cancer survivors, and they do the Dragon Boat Races. In the month of July, we have the Dragon Festival on Phelan Lake Park, and these women, they have now two teams, and they also do international races. Another group that is working on behalf of the lymphedema is called the Lymphedema Treatment Act. There are about 3 to 5 million of men, women, and children living with lymphedema in the United States, and they need insurance coverage for the medically necessary compression supplies. Yesterday, today, and tomorrow, this group and the advocates are in Congress. I will encourage you to get into the internet, get into the website, and this is the bill that we're trying to pass. So these medically necessary compression supplies or garments will be covered by insurance, especially Medicare. Gracias. This is Machu Picchu. This is the land where I come from, Peru. And my dad was born in this area of Cusco. Now we're going to talk with Karen. She's going to continue with the presentation.
Thanks, Carmela. That was great. I'm on slide 66. I think I'll go by numbers. I'm going to talk about current and new advances in lymphedema treatments, 67. The components of lymphedema therapy treatment are gradient compression bandaging, manual lymph drainage, fitting of compression garments, exercise to facilitate the lymph flow, and we're going to go into each of these areas, skin care precautions, and then instructions for follow-up care. The goals we're trying to do is reducing the volume. Usually it can have some pain with it, so we're trying to help with pain, soften and reduce fibrosis, educating on the home program, risk reduction for infection, and also improving cosmesis and function of the arms and trunk. So we're going to start with external compression. We do a thing called gradient compression bandaging to really move fluid. Now, you've probably maybe heard of compression garments before, but we're going to first go into the gradient compression bandaging. So I'm on slide 69, sorry. The effects of external compression is to move the fluid into those deeper vessels. It encourages that fluid to move up the limb, and then also there's a muscle pump action that when you have compression, they're working together to help push that fluid back up. It supports your vessels and your veins, and then it also helps that reaccumulation of that excess fluid. Slide 70. With gradient compression bandaging, we apply these bandages externally. We use 100% short stretch cotton bandages, and they really work beautifully. Everybody always kind of hates to do the bandaging, but it is the most efficient way of moving fluid. So I'm going to have you move to slide 71, and you'll start to see some of the bandages. We put bandages around every finger. If we don't put bandages on the fingers, we could actually push fluid into those, right, because it's further away from the body. And then here's a picture of the bandages up the arm. It will look like ACE wraps, and we don't use ACE wraps. Those have too much elasticity. You can get the pressure wrong. The pressure needs to be tighter by the hand than the wrist, then the elbow, so it's pushing fluid up towards the body. And it really works very efficiently at moving fluid. So we use a lot of these during the intensive phase. People are in these 23 hours a day. They take them off to shower. We are pushing fluid out. Now, it moves fluid really effectively up to the shoulder and trunk, but it's really hard to get that fluid out of the shoulder and trunk. It's hard to get compression up there. There's no way to really, I mean, we've tried, but it's hard to get bandaging up in that area. And so slide 73 is the manual lymph drainage. And here we are trying to redirect that lymph fluid. And so on slide 74. Remember that fluid that's in there, if you've ever had a blister, it fills with that kind of clearish fluid. That is what the lymph fluid is. This is your immune system. These proteins pull in all of the good stuff that we need to heal. So every time that there is a pain response anywhere, it pulls fluid into it to try to heal it up. So with the lymph drainage, we're trying to get that out of the trunk. You can see those quadrants again that Carmela was talking about. And we are very lightly going to stretch the skin. It's very light because those initial lymphatic vessels are right in the skin. So we're going to very lightly stretch the skin in the direction that we want fluid to move to. So it might be along those anastomoses that she was talking about before too. slide 75, I wanted to touch on some advancements in the treatment. So some of you are familiar already with the treatment, and so these are some new things. This is a PhysioTouch. And if you saw the Olympics, they had these things that were cupping. Remember how they had these like kind of circles on their back? And this is not going to be as aggressive as that, but it has that same kind of ability to stretch that skin up. And it can help with fibrosis in that it just allows things to move when they start to get a little hard and firm. Slide 76. This is another advancement in the treatment. It's called a HIVAMAT. So again, during that kind of lymph drainage portion, during that massage, we could use this, and you put a glove on your hand, the therapist does, and it causes that hand to do some vibration type movements. And as we're doing the lymph drainage, again, it kind of helps to stir things up. It helps move fibrosis, and it can help with the lymph drainage. Slide 77. This is another form of treatment, and it kind of mimics that lymph drainage again. We're trying to put a stretch on that skin to cause those initial lymphatic vessels to move fluid in the direction we want it to move to. And so this tape is applied in certain directions to lift that skin up and pull that in a certain direction so that it can get some movement again. Slide 78, lymphedema risk reduction. So again, I've been in the treatment. So far we've done compression bandaging and then the lymph drainage. And now we're going to talk about skin care and risk reduction. And so the National Lymphedema Network came out with paper statements, and it's to debunk the risk of lymphedema. So on slide 79, again, it's the National Lymphedema is kind of our, it's who run our conferences, and so they're really respected in the world of lymphedema. And they're website is the www.lymphnet.org, and I encourage everybody to look there because that is where a lot of our information comes from. And so they came up with these position papers, and they're really good information. So slide 80, lymphedema risk reduction practices. 81, first is skincare. Because this is your immune system, it's always attracted into areas that have cuts and scrapes, and so you can pull more fluid into this area every time that there's a pain response, and we want to not have that fluid move in there so quickly. And so first of all, keep your extremity clean and dry. Apply moisturizer daily to prevent chapping and chafing of the skin. And also that lymph fluid, it doesn't bring the nutrients in like it used to, so you need to moisturize. Pay attention to your nail care and don't cut the cuticles. Again, we don't want any cuts in the or scrapes in the skin. Protect your exposed skin with sunscreen and insect repellent. Use care with razors to avoid nicks and skin irritations. If possible, avoid punctures such as injections or blood draws. Wear gloves while doing activities that can cause skin injury, like washing dishes, gardening, working with tools, using chemicals such as detergents. If scratches and punctures in the skin occur, wash with soap and water and apply antibiotics. Observe for signs of infection, like redness. If a rash, itching, redness, pain, increased skin temperature, increased swelling, fever, or flu-like symptoms occur, contact your physician immediately for early treatment of possible infection. And Carmela had shown you some pictures of that. Slide 82, activity lifestyle. Every time that there's a pain response, more fluid's coming to that area, and we're trying to reduce that. So we don't want to over-exercise our muscles. We want you to exercise, but we want you to do so safely. And you build up just a little bit slower than how you probably did before you had the lymphedema. So gradually building up the duration and intensity of any activity or exercise. There's a long exercise position paper at the NLN, so it's worth the read. Frequent rest periods during activity to allow for limb recovery. Monitor the size of your limb during and after activity for changes in size, shape, tissue texture, soreness, heaviness, or firmness. And also pay attention to the symptoms. Is it achy? Maintaining an optimal weight, as obesity is a major lymphedema risk factor.
So
slide 83. Yeah.
Carrie, we had a question regarding activity, so this is probably a great place for this.
Absolutely.
So the question is, I had a double mastectomy 3 years ago with sentinel node 1 removed only. No radiation, no chemo. She loves boxing, and she's wondering if boxing is a bad idea or should she proceed with no fear.
If she's been person doing it, I'm pretty sure she's fine doing it. So the idea is that we don't want people to live their lives around these things, but we want people to know that there is a risk-benefit ratio to this. And so it often comes up in terms of massage. I'm going to pull that in for a second, where when you do standard deep tissue massage, you can pull some fluid out to the tissues. And yet, if there's a pain response, well, that pain response is also pulling tissue fluid out to the tissues. So sometimes having a deep tissue massage helps that person and helps their swelling in the long run, but there is still that kind of risk that they take with a massage. It's kind of the same with exercise. There's such a huge benefit to exercise. And if you've been doing it, go ahead. And honestly, even if you had lymphedema, you could do it, but you'd have to start slower and then slowly build your time up to it. Carmela, any thoughts?
I agree with Jerry. If you were used to do this type of exercises, you can go back to your physical activity if you don't have any complications and start gradually building up to the point where you were used to do. So what I tell my patients is before you had your breast cancer, you were a person who didn't like exercise. And then after breast cancer, you're not going to be able to go and be a marathon or a weightlifting person. You need to start gradually. So every activity has to be prescribed and recommended by a person who knows about exercises, the therapies, or athletic trainee, and just be careful with the gradual. That's the key word, to be gradual when you're building up your activity.
All right, I'm going to go back. It's a slide 83. Avoid limb constriction if possible. Avoid having a blood pressure taken on the at-risk extremity, so especially that repetitive high pumping that goes on with those things. Also, I've heard where the mechanical ones, and this is in the position statements as well, the mechanical ones go up so much higher than if a nurse is taking it. They don't go up quite as high, and so that's a really high amount of pressure with the mechanical ones. Wear non-constrictive jewelry and clothing. And avoid carrying a heavy bag or purse over the at-risk or lymphedematous extremity. Slide 84, compression garments. And again, I'm going to talk this right now. I'm more in the skincare. I am going to talk about compression garments again in a minute as part of treatment. So this is just that you have to have it be well-fitting. This is going to help your arm, especially for strenuous activities, weightlifting, prolonged standing, or running. You would never wear them with wounds or with poor circulation. But we only do them for patients with lymphedema. This is always a question that comes up. If you have lymphedema, you should be wearing a well-fitting compression garment for air travel as well as your exercise. When you don't have lymphedema, the NLN does not recommend compression garments. And the reason being is that a lot of people get in poor fitted garments, and they can kind of be tight at the top of your arm and maybe a little looser at the bottom. And so as they have demonstrated some cases where people actually got lymphedema because it was a poor fitted sleeve. And so they do not recommend them if you don't already have lymphedema. Slide 85. Extremes of temperature. Again, in the hot part of summer, in heat, all of the vessels, all of your blood vessels and your lymphatic vessels will dilate, they will extend, and so they're not pumping very well. So we get more phone calls in the hot part of summertime than other times of the year, for me anyway, I do. Also, hot tubs and saunas can do it. Now, some people don't notice a thing in the heat. And so, again, it's this risk-benefit ratio, like how important is it to you? And then try it out. Yeah, it might flare you, but you know where to come. You know how to get there's treatment for it. So I always tell people just keep it in mind. Cold packs, also, this is more of a long-term chronic swelling. And so by constricting those vessels and making them smaller, they're not pumping. We really want them to pump. So ice packs are not really recommended. So avoid prolonged heat exposure over 15 minutes. Slide 86. So there was a little thought that these skincare precautions have never actually been proven through evidence-based practice. And the thought is that we can't just not educate this. This is based on years of people who understand this disease coming up with these recommendations. And so, yeah, it may not be evidence-based, but it has been seen clinically multiple times. So now I'm going back to the more of the treatment of lymphedema. We had talked about Bandazine and MLD, and those were the skincare precautions. Now we're into the exercises. Now these exercises are not like typical exercises. You know, we still want you to do all of your exercises, but these are based on the lymph drainage. So it's kind of using the muscle contraction for movement of fluid. It's using that stretch of the skin. It's best if you perform it with your compression on, and then it's performed in a specific sequence, just like the lymph drainage is. So we're trying to get things closest to and back to the heart. Slide 88. We're going to skip that one. Slide 89, compression garments. Again, these look more like compression socks, if you've ever seen those, but they are for the arm. Go ahead and go to slide 90, where you can see a picture of it. They come in different classes, different amounts of tightness and compression, 1, 2, 3, and 4. Usually it has to be ordered by a physician, and you go to a fitter to get those. There are some contraindications of compression garments, and that would be, again, if you don't have good circulation. Slide 91, you can see the glove of the compression garment. We always recommend that there's hand compression. You don't just start at the wrist, usually, because you could push fluid into the hand. Slide 92 is a picture of a compression bra. You will notice that the compression comes way up under that armpit very nicely, and also the compression comes down a little bit lower, and it's got a wider band. This one has room for a drain. Most of them don't have the drain. That was the only picture I really found of compression bras. And then slide 93 is a picture of a nighttime garment. This one is a Jovi. There's another company that makes one like it. You can put these on at night. So typically, again, we have reduced people with the bandaging. We get them small enough to get into a sleeve. We don't want to measure them when they're really big for a sleeve because that sleeve will keep them big. Compression garments don't always hold a person. There's a lot of elasticity in that, and so people can kind of swell into that. And so they wear their sleeve during the day, but if you're swelling into that, you need to reduce that stuff back out or else eventually that sleeve's just not going to fit you. So those people would have to wrap at night and wear their sleeve during the day, but then there are some alternatives to bandaging, and this would be one of them. You could put bandages on top of this, too, to get a little more compression, and then they also have, like, a lot of multiple Velcro devices, things like that, and they're never as good as bandaging. Bandaging is always the best thing that you can do for swelling. It's quite a sales pitch sometimes to talk people into it, but it really does work very efficiently, and they're quite comfortable if you're doing it correctly. Slide 94 is another picture of a nighttime garment. This is fairly new. Jokes just came out with this. And it's got little, I can't describe it, like it's this texture. It's a different texture than a sleeve. And it's got a cool beans almost in it is what I would call it, like a Beanie Baby, but they're cool. And so it's something you can wear at night that's a little cooler. So that's something new. Slide 95, these are the general contraindications, like infections, cardiac edema, or congestive heart failure. So if your heart's not pumping the fluid back to its body, of course, we don't want to send more fluid back there. Active cancer, and that just means that we're not right on top of where the cancer is working. We can be on the rest of your body kind of moving this fluid around. Arterial disease and also blood clots. Slide 96. And these next two slides, I just threw in some geriatric lymphedema special considerations. Most people don't fall into the standard. There's always medical complications and things to think about. And can people wrap themselves? And can people get compression sleeves on? And do they have caregivers? And do they have... So there's always things to think about when it comes to this. So slide 98. Is pneumatic compression pumps. This is another form of treatment in lymphedema. And it used to be just big chambers that would push full fluid, more like a compression would do. But it's only on your arm for maybe an hour a night. And then the stuff would just kind of trickle back down, and it really doesn't have the ability to break up those proteins and that fibrosis, and it kind of just pushes it into the trunk. So you can show slide 99. Here's a picture of it. And she does have a little trunk compression on that, but not a ton. And slide 100. So they are still used, but we just don't use them very often. There's other better things to do. Slide 100 is the FlexiTouch. And so this one came out, I'm going to guess, 6 or 7 years ago. And it's got tinier chambers. And each of those chambers is made to kind of stick to your skin and stretch it in the direction that we want fluid to flow. So they say that this more mimics lymph drainage, and it has a lot of trunk component to it, so I do like that one better. She's going to put her arms on the background there, and she's about to put it on, but she has the trunk already on. So it's a nice, because there's not a lot to do sometimes for the trunk. It's hard to reach. Slide 101. We're going to go into surgeries really quickly. Slide 102, the lymph node transplant. So this is fairly new. I will caution you, there's a few doctors that do this amazingly well, and they do a lot of them. And there's a lot of doctors that are hanging their sign that have done one. And if it were me, I'd want them to have a little more experience. So be careful is my only word of warning. So what they are taking is your normal lymph nodes. She's got lymphedema in the left arm. They're going to take good lymph nodes. Maybe they're trying to get lymph nodes from where you don't use all of them because they don't want to cause lymphedema in another part of the body. They move it over to her left axilla area, and then she is supposed to let those work for her. And some people have great success with this. Slide 103 is the suction-assisted protein lipectomy. And again, this is for all intents and purposes, it's liposuction, but it is very specific liposuction. They do not want to call it liposuction because it is so specific. And we don't want to blow out those initial lymphatic capillaries that are in the skin. And they have to be so careful about what kind of fat they're getting. They're really getting fibrosis. That lymphatic fluid turns to fibrosis, but eventually it becomes fat. And so it becomes so hard to remove that they can't. And so eventually this is a SAPL technique. And I've seen a couple of people with it, and it's quite amazing. And then another surgery, again, the lymphovenous bypass. And here you can see where in the more closer to the hand, up in the forearm, they are taking the lymph vessel in the green, and they are reattaching it into a blood vessel, so that then the blood vessels can take that fluid up. And they've had some good success with those as well. They usually do it down by the foot or the hand. Slide 105, there are a couple of research things in the works. First one, there's a medicine that they want to use. This is an anti-inflammatory medicine called Ubenimex. It's being done out of Stanford with Dr. Stanley Roxon. And he says it's kind of like Advil. It's anti-inflammatory, but Advil does not work on this fluid at all. As a matter of fact, I think he said that Advil can make it not good. So people who have been on this are staying on it. That's the weird thing. I don't think it's helping their fibrosis. And they said it's not making a huge like limb reduction, but the people who are on it want to stay on it afterwards, which I thought spoke volumes. So even if they're not getting a huge reduction, they're liking something about it. Slide 106 is a book that came out about a year ago. I think it's well worth your money. Lymphedema and Lipedema Nutrition Guide. It really, I'm not a nutritionist, nor are most CLTs, and so it's really allowed me to help people talk about their nutrition because it is important. There's so many lymph nodes in your gut that need to be addressed, and if we can clean that up, it really works well. And then slide 107, there's one more study called a BioBridge scaffold. They put it in with that vascularized lymph node transfer, and it helps things kind of gel in there, from what I understand, and they are using that in humans, but like in the Dominican Republic, as far as I remember. Great. Slide 108, this is our contact information, and slide 109.
Thank you, Carrie and Carmela. We do have a couple questions, so we have a little bit of time. The first question, so whichever one of you wants to address this best, is how can you determine fibrosis from scar tissue?
I'll take it. You can. It's kind of the same. It's the same fluid. If it's around a scar, I think sometimes it has a different feel to it. It feels like it goes into the scar. The same fluid that lays down scar is the same fluid that is your lymphatics. You know, it's your healing system. It's your immune system. And so sometimes it will have a different feel if it goes right into a scar, but they are sometimes quite similar in my world. Carmela, do you have thoughts?
Yeah, I usually you see more the scar tissue around the surgical area, where the fibrosis, you can find it along the limbs where the lymphatics have hardened and got thicker. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you very much. We do have another question. This is from a person that said, when I inquired of my general surgeon post-mastectomy, she said she didn't believe in lymphedema. Not until over a year later did I push to be seen by a physical therapist specializing in lymphedema. Who can educate our surgeons on this very real issue?
I think we all need to educate all the healthcare providers, meaning we, patients and therapists, because unfortunately, as I said, they don't get that education when they go through medical school. They have only 1 hour. So that's why organizations like the BCA and other advocates, we need to come out to the community and educate the physicians. So I had some physicians too that they didn't believe in lymphedema when I started back in 1992 practicing this. And here at Healthys, Dr. Rosenberg has the residents that come from the family medical practice, and they are spending some time with us in the lymphedema clinic, seeing the treatments and learning how to diagnose. So there is a lot of work to be done.
I just agree with that, yeah.
Great. And so another question is the FlexiTouch out of date? This person found it inconsistent.
The FlexiTouch have made some changes lately, as last week. They have changed the way that the arm garment and how they connect with the chest arm, they have made some changes. So if you have a FlexiTouch, you can call your therapist or call the rep that fitted you for the FlexiTouch, and they will come for free and they exchange the garments and get you with a new one, because they are changing as they go. They are making changes in their product.
And I find them to be either amazing for some people and average for some, you know, it's based on, I don't know what it's based on, but it's just like everything else. Some things work amazing for some people and some things don't.
And then another question that came in was for night garments. Who is the manufacturer of the, quote, cooler ones? This person has a quilted one that that they often end up taking off during the night from it getting too hot, especially with the hot flashes that I think a lot of us experience.
It's a really common thing. That's a new product by Jobst, and they are made, custom fitters are aware, should be aware of them and can fit for those.
One person also just submitted a question that said that they were told to increase protein after surgery. And should I change to reduce my lymphedema?
It's not recommended. That book specifically, I read it. And again, I'm not a nutritionist, but they say that you have to obviously get your normal amount, the dietary recommended amount, or else you will have issues. But no, you don't need to increase it for lymphedema. You're getting plenty as long as you're getting the dietary recommended amount. And that is from that Lipedema and Lymphedema book.
Great. Well, I have the your contact information slide back up. We got a request for that. So I'll just leave that up for another few seconds.
Perfect. Please contact us.
And then also, I would just like to remind everybody that this recording of this session will be on the breastcancereducation.org website. And we graciously thank our speakers, Carmela and Carrie, and to everyone for joining us today. Again, please share what you learned today via our social media channels, and please plan to join us for our next webinar on July 12th and at our annual education conference on Saturday, October 7th. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks so much, Anne.
Thank you.
Thank you.